This is our first episode of Clit Talk. I'm Carlin Ross, and I'm joined by Laura Bogish. And I thought we'd introduce our inspiration starting this podcast and who the hell we are.
Right? Exactly. I am so excited for this, Carlin, because so often we talk back and forth, like before or after a video or on the phone. And I just think like, you know, damn, we should get this like recorded.
And I love long form. And I started my career when I left law and went into sexuality and got the front page in the New York Times. And I met Betty Dotson, the PhD sexologist who I ended up partnering with, by podcasting in 2007. So this is like going home for me, because my whole point is let's catch the stories. Let's get women talking first person about their experience. So that's how I met Betty. I have the first episode, and then Clit Talk was a brand they had come across when I was doing mergers, and I took that brand and I wanted to launch Clit Talk, and then Betty and I got together. So it was, everything was Betty Dotson, right? Because she's the icon. So it's kind of like dusting it off.
Right. And it's, yeah, it's coming full circle. I just did a quick Google search, Clit Talk, when you like put the name out there to see like, well, is there anything else like it out there? And I found an old YouTube video of you and Betty, and it was called Clit Talk.
That's what I wanted to do. I wanted, and Betty resisted. She liked the video better than the audio podcast, although I did get her. We have a SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/Betty Dotson, and you can hear some of our old podcasts. But, you know, the work continues. So much has happened.
Yes.
And Clit Talk goes back to Betty's work. We're clit-centric.
Yes. Yes. And sharing our stories first person, that we really need to get our stories as women out there. We need to get education out there about our bodies. So Clit Talk just seems like the perfect name for all that we're going to put on the table.
It's our history.
Yes.
And it goes back to the workshops, body sex, sharing first person. How do you feel about your body and orgasm? So here, we're going to talk about everything. We're going to have a continuing conversation about menopause, everything you should know about your body, blogging. We've been writing about a lot and bringing that back. And we have our coaches who are training to do the work, and they're writing and their stories.
Yes. So we'll be giving information about sexuality, about orgasm, just all the things that we hear in our work.
Everything that you should know. Everything that we should be taught as tweens and teens. And then have that education continue. I can't tell you how many young women would come through Betty's and do workshops and not know that they went into menopause.
Yes.
No less any conversation about perimenopause.
Well, because we don't talk about sex, Carlin. We don't talk about our bodies enough with friends. So I hope we become the friends that listeners need to hear, like the big sisters, the moms, the aunts.
I'm
going to
say the cool aunt.
Right?
We're going to get into the nitty gritty, all the good stuff. So I thought today we talk a little bit, like I'll interview you and you can interview me so that everyone knows who we are.
Because
we're assuming that people have been following the YouTube channel and following DotsonandRoss.com and BodySex.com, and that's where you can find all of our work. But Laura, when was the first time that you heard about Betty Dotson, who is our founder? She's no longer with us. She left the planet in 2020. But she is a famous second wave, iconic feminist who focused on liberating women's sexuality and how to orgasm. And she ran these workshops teaching women how to connect to their bodies. So when did you first hear about Betty?
I was in my early 30s and I found her best-selling book, Sex for One, on the shelf of a Borders bookstore. And I was in therapy and my therapist told me I needed to learn to love myself more. So when I was looking in the self-help section and saw Sex for One, I thought, this is going to help me. And I read it It changed my life. I still have my original copy sitting on the shelf behind me. I read it over the years, and it would always bring me back to myself and back to my sexuality and making me the priority. So that's when I first heard of Betty. And then fast forward, I was in my mid-50s, retired from a career in education, teaching first grade, teaching the college level, teaching other teachers. So that was really the bulk of my career. But after I retired, I wanted to do something, work on something that challenged me. And I found DodsonandRoss.com and that you and Betty were doing workshops. And as much as it terrified me to be naked in a circle, I had to do it. So what started me.
She had quit doing workshops for about 25 years. And when I came on the scene, that was the first thing I was like, let's do workshops again.
Right.
So you came, what year did you come to a workshop?
So it was May 2016. So we're talking exactly 10 years ago was my first workshop.
And that was in the beginning of our relaunch. That was very early because we shot a documentary of what is a workshop, and that was 2011.
Yes. Yes.
And then like a year or two later, I got Betty to do workshops again because everyone kept demanding and emailing saying, I want to do a workshop now that I saw the movie. So you were pretty new, like in the original relaunch of that. That's exciting.
Yes. Yes. And it changed my life. I don't think I would be the person I am. And it wasn't about like improved orgasm, although my orgasm did improve. But I was orgasmic when I walked into the circle. For me, it was about healing body shame. And that brought me to self-love because I couldn't love myself if I didn't love my body.
Now, what about your body didn't you love?
I didn't love my size. I had always been or perceived myself to be a plus size girl growing into womanhood. I think I carried the body shame of generations of women before me. My mother certainly had body image issues. And just in our society, our bodies have to be one way. And if they're not, then there must be something wrong with us and we have to change our body to make it better.
I know, God forbid we're a size 12, 14 or up.
Right, right.
You know, because what is it? You always have to be I remember it used to be you had to be a size 8.
Yes.
Like in my teens and 20s. And then that became 6. And then it went 4. And then it went 2. And I remember thinking like, I'm never going to live up to that because I was an 8. And it was like, there was no way I was going to lose that many sizes.
Yes. Yes. And I had disordered eating. I mean, I was always trying to change something about myself and it was never good enough. And so I remember walking up to the door of that first workshop and I was just drenched in sweat. Like I had just taken a shower at the hotel. I walked 2 blocks and I was head to toe in sweat. And I don't normally sweat. And, you know, I came in, I saw you and you were naked. And I knew the next thing I had to do was take my clothes off. And I just like, you know, rushed out like, Carla, I'm sweating bullets. And you said, well, take your clothes off and come in the circle. You'll feel better. And yeah, that was the biggest jump off a cliff I ever took. And I am so glad that I did.
That is so Betty. Betty is like, okay, you're nervous about getting new because that's what everyone's nervous about in the workshops. We bow our heads first. I came to the door naked. I greet you. And she's like, just get them naked. And she had this long foyer with 13 hooks and everyone pick a hook. And then you step down into the living room and that's it. You were in the circle.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
It's like slap, slap, slap.
Right, exactly.
Now, did you feel comfortable immediately or how did that happen?
So no, it took me probably about 45 minutes to an hour. I mean, all of the other women were nude. And at first I started comparing myself with other bodies. And of course, my thought process was all negative. Like I am the biggest, I'm the fattest in the room. And I could see the beauty of every other body, but not my own. And so I really think I disassociated, like for at least that first 45 minutes. It just felt like I was in a dream and I was like looking from up in a corner. But Betty Betty just had the ability to normalize. I mean, I remember her, and I'm going to tear up. I remember her making eye contact with me, and she was the first person who looked at me where I didn't feel any judgment.
That was Betty. Betty, that's what was so beautiful about you. We'd go in that room, and wherever it is, you'd say, there was never any judgment. She was with you in that moment.
Yes.
And you were you, and she was accepting.
Yes, yes, yes. So that just throughout the rituals, you know, looking at genital show and tell and our vulvas together, there was just an ease that Betty and a comfort that it was kind of like this mothering energy and radical acceptance that I needed from somebody else. Like I needed to have it modeled. And it was like throughout the circle, because then all of the other women accepted, we all accepted each other, and we could all start to see beauty in our own bodies. And I'll tell you, by the second day, I couldn't wait to be naked.
That's always what happened. The women that were the most nervous about getting nude, by day two, we're all in the circle, we're all naked, they would drop something, bend over, and like right in front of your face. And you're like, whoa, right? Hello, starfish.
Yes.
It's interesting because it's not, I think, how we always feel that our change will happen within us. Mm-hmm. And that we have to generate it first.
Yes.
And I think what I learned from Betty is that just by me being comfortable and loving myself, radical self-love, connecting to my body, cycling that orgasm energy, accepting, because look, she was in her 80s.
Right.
I mean, really, for someone to be naked and having groups of strangers come into their living room, and it's hard when your boobs are sagging.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard, but she didn't, there was never any concern about that. It was like, this is who I am. This is my body. And what would she always say? She's like, well, you know, things have changed. I don't really like seeing myself in a mirror, but I can eat, shit, walk, talk, and goddamn it, I'm having great orgasms. And for women to be in that glow.
Yes.
It's like her vibration shifted our vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't giving advice. She wasn't giving you any kind of technique.
Right.
All I have to do is cycle that energy within my own body.
Yes. It was her modeling herself, her relationship with herself, but then also accepting everyone else in the room, which you can't really do until you accept yourself.
Exactly. It's the first step.
Mm-hmm.
I remember because I was assisting in the workshops.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to expect exactly because I'd had an experience when we went to Copenhagen and ran a workshop and that was a one-off, but I didn't know if every workshop was like that.
Yes.
And I remember having the thought, leaving Betty's and on the subway with my ear pods in and going, wow, for the first time in my life, I was in a room with women and I didn't do the hierarchy. And place myself in it.
Right.
And I found myself feeling like seeing everyone's beauty and attractiveness and liking everyone and wanting to be with them. And it was like, wow, I don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do the self-judgment. I don't have to judge anyone else. I don't care what they look like. And in fact, I think so-and-so has fantastic breasts. And oh, I love the way her hips and oh, I love the rolls of her stomach. You know, when we did group massage, that was the lesson because the bodies that felt the best had the most flesh.
Yes. Yeah.
The opposite of our conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do remember you coming in sweaty.
Yeah.
Now, so you have this experience. And then what was next? I don't even remember. How did you reconnect?
Well, I decided, like, you know, it wasn't an immediate turn of the switch as far as me, like moving into self-love. It just wasn't like a magic wand, but it was the start. It was the catalyst for change. And I wanted more. I wanted to learn how to grow into my older years. I mean, Betty, when I took my first workshop, I was 57 and Betty was 87. So I thought, I want to age the way Betty has. And this was new and intriguing. And I had this education background. And I thought, what if I could pay this forward? Like I wanted to do, because when you teach, you learn, right? So that's when I decided I wanted to become a coach and learn from Betty. So then my next workshop was October 2016. And I took a certification workshop.
And those are always so fun because everyone's connected to their orgasm. And I, you know, I was trying to remember how Betty and I put that together. And I believe it was the women. It's like the women will tell you what they need.
Right.
All of a sudden women were like, I want to run workshops.
Yes.
And Betty would give the sign of the cross and say, okay, run a workshop. And they go, no, right. I need to learn more.
Yeah. I knew I didn't know enough that I wasn't ready. And you had put together like a whole program of books to read. And, but it was really being in the circle. And I remember, I remember a couple of things from that certification workshop. And one that just like really told me like I was in the right place. I remember on day two, we had done practice genital show and tell with each other on day one. So I supported a woman during genital show and tell. And I just felt so connected. It seemed like so natural and I wasn't nervous and I was so focused on her. And then the next day, like before the workshop started or during a break or something, you came up to me and whispered, we want you. Betty and I talked at dinner last night and we want you.
I don't even remember that, Laura. Well, yes. So there you go. Okay. That is so me because I'm like, I don't mince words. It's like, we want right. you.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you have an education background and we need to put together online courses and curriculum. Laura. Yeah. Oh, and you're into the kink movie scene.
Right. Yes. Like,
oh, you're our girl.
Yeah. So then you encouraged me because you were planning a retreat for Betty's birthday, like that summer. And you said, you have to come to the retreat this summer. And I said, well, I'm not sure I can afford it with, you know, paying the certification fee and, you know, cause I'm retired. Right. And I always had a side hustle making money on the side, but I wasn't sure if I could save up money for all of that. And you were like, don't worry about it. You need to be with Betty, like while
she's here,
while she's alive. Like, you know, she's like, she's 87. Who knows how long we're going to have with her. And I mean, I found the money and everything was okay, but you know, I thought like, wow, like, yeah, I do. I really do need to spend time with Betty.
That is one of my, the deepest gratitude I feel in my life is that I met Betty and for 13 years, I spent every day speaking with her. And 3 days a week, I would go into her apartment and we'd be there 10 hours and we'd go out to dinner and we traveled the world. And I learned so much. She really was a genius.
She was. And I want to know, Carlin, like, how did you get to her door? Because you were a lawyer and then an entrepreneur. So how on earth did you end up starting this work with Betty?
Okay, a couple of things, because, you know, you look back in perspective and you're like, oh, I'd started this kind of tech roll-up company with two male partners. And we were rolling up assets of failed companies and putting them, repackaging them. We were going to build this whole like interactive media empire. Mm-hmm. And so the two things that really led me to her door is one, Candida Royale was filming with Playgirl TV in my studio. And at this point I was like, you know, I want to do something around sexuality and feminism. And so I introduced myself and she's the one who introduced me to the New York Times writer who was doing a piece about women with professional backgrounds going into the sex industry. So this is 2004. And the whole point was, it was the beginning of the sexual wellness. We didn't even have that term though, but that's what was. So I get the article, it ends up on the front page. Okay. Grant, Betty's longtime friend, pulled it out. First time a sex article is on the front page and handed it to Betty. So Betty had already heard my name because the first words of the article are my name with my picture.
Right. Yeah.
Things are going south with the male partners. They don't like that I'm pulling out ahead. So that's kind of ending. And I had hooked up with this billionaire guy in the entertainment industry and he was like, you should podcast. So that set me down the podcasting route. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I need to know more. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to get a PhD in sexology. But if I do this podcast and I interview the greats, it will force me to read their books. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the first person I end up as Betty's door.
Uh-huh.
And we connected instantly. Mm-hmm. It was like she was the mother, sister, cool aunt, best friend I always wanted. I literally, you know, they say you'll see someone across the room mm-hmm. and your eyes will lock. And you'll just like magnets and it'll be the love of your life. That never happened to me with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It happened mm-hmm. to me with Betty Dotson.
Betty.
When I was in her apartment coming in with my, you know, laptop and USB port microphones, and I caught the first glimpse of her, mm-hmm. I was in. I was mm-hmm. in love.
Yes.
And then she asked me to go into business. And
yes,
I almost thought it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like 15 minutes into a conversation, but that was Betty. She had no impulse control.
Right, right.
And she saw people.
Well, she felt it. She felt it. And she knew that you were the one.
And never in my life had I ever felt as seen or as valued mm-hmm. than that moment. Mm-hmm. And as a woman trying to, you know, make her way and hitting the glass ceilings and having the male partners and having a background of a traumatic childhood where you're never valued. Betty yes. made me feel valued.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest was history. Like all of a sudden we just started spending time together.
Yes.
And it was like, I just wanted to hear every story. We did great work and we had a great fucking time.
Right. Yeah.
We traveled all over the world.
And you know what? It's because of you, Carlin. I will say, I'm crediting, giving you all the credit. It's because of you that Betty's legacy lives on. You got as much information, as much wisdom. You videotaped, you recorded, you put videos up on YouTube, you did podcasts, you filmed her so we could have it for the ages.
We wrote every day. Mm-hmm. She would answer sex questions from the internet. And then we'd do these like longer articles and we'd do them together. And I was her editor and she'd be my editor and we kept it going. And I miss that about the internet. And that's why I'm like, we should do this podcast. And I want to share everything that I learned from Betty, share the work, mm-hmm. get the conversation going. And like reading, I only want to read women.
Yes.
I only yes. want to listen to women.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm 53. When I met Betty, I was 32. And you're 60. I always get your age wrong, so I'm not even
I'm 67.
You know, don't you feel like I have a lot to fucking say?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Like, I feel like intellectually and emotionally, I'm at my zenith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I read something the other day, that the piece of research that said that women hit their peak cognitive functioning between mm-hmm. the ages of 55 and 65. And I'm like, of course, because that's right. when they say that we're in menopause and our pussies are all dried up and no one wants us.
Yeah.
It's your power.
Right. No, totally. I mean, you know, we're in the crone phase. You're a young crone. I'm like a developing crone. right?
But don't you feel like when I go out into the world, because I'm creating my own sex energy with my self-pleasure practice, I just feel like everywhere I go, if I wanted to hook up, I could.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I don't feel invisible at all as an older woman. And I am. I'm so much more connected. I'm interested in women and conversations with women.
This moment where they're trying so desperately to put women back in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
when they're denying us healthcare and women are dying of sepsis, they're trying so hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And I just feel like it's too late.
Yes. Yes.
It's too late. And I want to, like, I'm so excited that we're living this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think this wave of feminism is incredible.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, the whole trad wife is kind of like a backlash to women moving forward with careers and having other choices and choices with birth control and choices with men, with women leading the way.
I read a very interesting thing. Anne Hathaway has licensed the rights to some book where it's a trad wife influencer that goes back in time and lives the trad life real lifestyle. And I thought, oh my God, it's brilliant. You bought it?
Yes, I just bought it. I haven't started it yet, but my sister-in-law said it was one of the top five books she's ever read in her life.
Really? What's the name of it?
It's called Yesteryear.
Yesteryear. Okay. I have nothing to read right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Get it. And we'll talk about it.
Because, you know, you think you want that when you have a credit card in your pocket. Mm-hmm. And unless you have 15 kids, you've used birth control.
Right.
And I'm going to wager a lot of these influencers have also had abortions. Mm-hmm. Because if you are active sexually like I was and you're in touch and you're young, I mean, if you think of the odds, every time you have sex, like any birth control, nothing's 100%. Mm-hmm. So think of all the times you have sex and then all the times it can fail. The fact that you've never, like, I just don't believe it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So to avail yourselves of feminism. Mm-hmm. And then undermine the core tenets and mm-hmm. our rights and privileges.
Yes.
Yeah, you need a comeuppance.
Right. Exactly. You know, and it's really about choice. Like, I love, like, our term intentional motherhood because it's like if you need to choose to be a mother in order to be the best mother.
Well, and it's expensive.
Yes.
And you have to do all the reproductive labor. Mm-hmm. You can't force someone to take that on when they're not ready. You know, I think a lot of this too is just capitalism. Like, they think they're railing against feminism, like that's what took that option from you, that I want to stay home and raise my kids. Mm-hmm. Feminism didn't take that away. Capitalism mm-hmm. took that away. You can't afford. I mean, it's very rare if you want to have three or four kids that you can have one salary.
Right.
Like, that's top whatever percent. So the average mm-hmm. person, like, women need to work.
Yes. No, that's very true.
Like, we assume it's a choice. But at the same time, I don't think as a mother, I would be as loving and supportive of my son if it's all I had, if I didn't have something else to kind of feed my soul.
Right.
So exactly. That's how I see this podcast, is like a little bump in the arm, some information, a feed your soul, join the conversation. It's very exciting, and I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, the fact that we can call it clit talk.
Yes.
Pussy in your face.